This morning's lesson text will be taken from the book of Matthew, chapter 5, verses 14, 15, and 16. If you're reading from a pew Bible, you'll find it on page 810. I encourage you to follow along. I hope that you do. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven.
Thank you, Larry. Good morning, everyone. If you will, open your Bibles or turn in your Bibles. We're going to build off what he just read and now go to Isaiah chapter 58. Isaiah 58, and if you have one of the pew Bibles, that's on page 617, 617. We are in the second part of a series. We're closing the year out called The Light of the World. As Larry read from Matthew chapter 5, Jesus said, "You are the light of the world." And as we go through this series, we are especially focusing on Jesus' words to us as His disciples, as His students, His followers, that we are to reflect God's light and the light of Christ. Yes, when Christ was in the world, He was the light of the world, and now He's passed that torch on to us, for us to be the light of the world. What does that mean? What does that look like? And how do we live that out? You are the light of the world. But Jesus also said in Luke chapter 11, verse 35, "Be careful lest the light in you be darkness." And that is a real and sobering warning for each one of us, I hope. And when we're honest with ourselves, I try to be transparent about this. I speak for me and I'll let you speak for you. There are moments when I wonder and I worry if I've allowed the darkness to overwhelm the light within me. If I've allowed things in my life or things in the world or difficult and frustrating situations to preoccupy me in such a way that I've put my light under a basket and it no longer shines the way it should for the Lord and the way that really benefits and prospers the lives and souls of other people. Sometimes we look at our lives and we wonder, is there really much light within me right now? Because, well, you know, I go to worship week after week, and I attend the services as often as I possibly can, but I just don't seem to be getting a whole lot out of it. There just doesn't seem to be a spark of light being lit in my soul. In my private life, sometimes I feel like the light has gone out. I try to pray. I really try to develop my relationship with the Lord, but there just seems to be a disconnect. And sometimes the light just seems to be more and more dim. I'm involved at church, and I'm doing things that, you know, I read my Bible, and it just doesn't seem to be translating. You know, the stuff that I do on Sunday doesn't seem to be connecting with Monday through Saturday, and the light just is, it's pretty dark. I figure just about all of us, if you've been a Christian long enough, and by the way, if you're not a Christian, we want to be honest with you. When you become a Christian, there's moments, yeah, your light shines brightly and you're on fire for the Lord. And then there are times when you feel like you struggle. You do struggle. You don't just feel like it. You know you're struggling. And you wonder about your light. You wonder about the light within you. And you wonder about the light and its potential to shine before others in your life. If you've ever felt that way, I'm here to say you're not alone. You're not alone when it comes to the group of people in this auditorium this morning, but you're also not alone when it comes to God's people throughout all of history. Back in the days of Isaiah the prophet, hundreds of years, 600 to 800 years before the life of Jesus himself, the prophet speaks to the reality of people who It's pretty clear that they want to connect with God. They want a different, if you'll allow this phrase, a different spiritual experience going on in their lives personally. But things just aren't adding up. How are we going to remedy these things? How are we going to find light within ourselves if we are going to be a light for the world? I want to start by talking about a couple of lights that we're missing, and then I want to show you the remedy that Isaiah provides in Isaiah chapter 58. And the first thing that is missing is some of the things that I've just spoken to. A missing light from worship. A light missing in worship. And as God in many ways is the one speaking in Isaiah 58, and as He speaks, God acknowledges and recognizes what's going on inside people's hearts in that day and time. Here's what He says in Isaiah chapter 58. I'm going to start in verse 2 and read through the first part of verse 3. God says, "Yet they seek Me daily and delight to know My ways, as if they were a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the judgment of their God. They ask of Me righteous judgments. They delight to draw near to God. And they ask this, 'Why have we fasted and you see it not?'" Now, as you read throughout the entirety of this chapter, both the beginning of this chapter and if you go later to the end of the chapter, it's both written in the context of worship. The beginning talks about the practice of fasting. I've said this before, I sometimes don't think we probably talk about fasting enough in our lessons and in our Bible classes. It's practiced in the Old Testament. Jesus and the disciples practice it when you get to the pages of the New Testament. And from time to time, it might be something that benefits us. But in Isaiah 58, clearly it's something that the people are practicing on a regular basis out of a sense of worship and making a sacrifice before the Lord. You get to the end of the chapter and they're going to talk about, or God's going to talk about, Sabbath observance. Certainly an important part of living out the law and a sense of devotion and worship to God. And yet the people say, "We've done all these things. We do it." And even God Himself recognizes in verse 2, "They seek Me daily. It seems like they delight to know My ways, as if they were a nation that did righteousness." You read those words for themselves just in verse 2, and it sounds very commendable. These people are worshiping on a regular basis. And by the way, there's nothing in this text, in this passage, that indicates that the people were violating the technical details of worship. Yes, there are passages in the Old Testament that show us there were times when the people of Israel, their worship was not always acceptable to God because they just thought they could do whatever they wanted to do. They were doing things in violation of the law. God wasn't pleased by that. Here, though, you see the outward details, the physical aspects from everything you read here, and by the way, in other passages we'll look at a little bit later, in Isaiah especially, where God does not say, "You're getting the details wrong." So what's wrong? What's missing? Something inside here. Their approach and their heart for worship, it wasn't based in, "What are God's desires for me? What does God want for my life? What is God's will?" As you read this passage, it becomes pretty clear. It's, "Well, I come to worship daily. I fast regularly. I observe the Sabbath." Why? Because I want God to fulfill the desires of my heart. Those approaches to worship are worlds apart. "God, I'm going to worship You so You fulfill my desires." Or, "God, I seek You in worship because I want to fulfill Your desire, Your will for my life, Your will for all of humanity." And so the people themselves ask a question that is not uncommon in today's world. "I'm just not getting a whole lot out of this." The way they put it in verse 3 is, "Why have we fasted and You see it not?" "God, I've been faithful. I've been putting in the time." Put it in our context today. "I've been singing the songs and putting money in the plate and I'm here every time the door's open. God, why aren't you paying attention? Well, you read Isaiah 58, it's obvious God's paying attention. He knows what's going on. But the problem is when we approach worship with selfish motives, like James would write in a New Testament context, you ask and do not receive. Why? Because the things you're asking for, you want it for yourself. You're not seeking God's will first, you're seeking your personal will first. In the light of worship, yeah, you might be going through the motions, the technical details might be correct, but no, you won't get a whole lot out of that, will you? It's like a black hole. It just sucks energy out of you. And then there's darkness. And the darkness of that kind of worship leads to a dark inward spiritual life. I just don't know where God is. I don't know if He's paying attention. I don't know if He cares about what's going on in my life. And the light is missing. The second light that we find missing in this chapter goes beyond the worshipers themselves, the children of Israel themselves. And that is, the light has been missing in the world. Specific to the people of Israel, the light is missing in their communities, in their streets, in their villages. Read this passage along with me and listen to what God says, starting with verse 4. He says, "Behold, you fast..." In response to them saying, "We fast and you don't pay attention." He says, "You fast only to quarrel and to fight and to hit with a wicked fist. Fasting like yours this day will not make your voice to be heard on high. Is such the fast that I choose? A day for a person to humble himself? Is it to bow down his head like a reed and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Will you call this a fast and a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover him, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh." God has a response to the people who say, "We're just not getting a whole lot out of this. We fast and you don't pay attention. You don't answer us." He says, "Let's talk about fasting. Let's talk about sacrifice. Let's talk about honoring God and committing yourself to Him." And what does He do? He says, "I want you to look out. I want you to look at the world in which you live right now. I want you to look at the very people who are your brethren, your fellow members, your cousins, the Israelites, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And what do you see in your midst? There's a lot of darkness. A lot of people who are suffering." As you read verses 4 through 7, most of what God details here are not sins of commission. Now, in verse 4, He does say, "You fast only to quarrel and to fight and to hit with a wicked fist." Those are sins of commission. But as you keep reading everything else that He's going to say in this passage, He's going to largely talk about situations in their world where people were suffering, people were being taken advantage of, people were being oppressed and abused. And I have a feeling, I can't say this with authority, but I have a feeling, just knowing the way we as human beings work, the vast majority of people who heard God's words through Isaiah would say, "I didn't do that. I am not oppressing, I am not actively oppressing my fellow man." Yes, some of the people in positions of power are doing that. Some of the rich and wealthy among us, yes, they are taking advantage of the poor and the weak and lowly, but I personally am not doing that. And they would probably be validated in saying, "I have not done much of the stuff that you are including in this list." But what does God especially focus on? Verse 6, to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, to break every yoke, to share your bread with the hungry, to bring in the homeless, to clothe the naked. And then the last phrase in verse 7, I think in many ways speaks to everything better than any other statement. And not to hide yourself from what? Your own flesh. In the context of this passage, I don't think God is speaking to your own flesh as being your physical family. I think He's speaking to your fellow man. Not to hide yourself away from the darkness that is in the world. As you look at what is going on in people's lives, as you see situations in which darkness has overwhelmed somebody, here's what you have. An opportunity. An opportunity to bring life and light where darkness is so thick. If you want a New Testament parallel, turn to Luke chapter 10. The parable of the Good Samaritan. You think about those first two men, the priest and the Levite. As they're traveling down the road, there's this man left for dead. But here's what the priest and the Levite could say. We didn't beat him up. And they're right. They didn't inflict harm upon him. So what was their sin? They didn't help. They didn't bring light to darkness. In fact, they go as far away on the other side of the road as possible to act like I don't see that, to ignore, to not lend the helping hand that we see the Samaritan doing later in that parable. And whether you live in Isaiah's day, or if you lived in Jesus' day, or if you live in our world today, one of the greatest temptations for religious people is for us to hide ourselves from darkness. Last week, as we started this series, we talked about us being light and that we shine truth to where lies and falsehood exist, where the world is telling people things that God regards as sin. That's not sin, that's acceptable. God calls us to be light in those situations. The world needs us to be light, to shine truth, to expose sin and evil and wickedness for what they are. But we don't just do that with our words. You see, the effects and consequences of sin, evil, and wickedness are these people who are left in difficult positions, who are left in plights of struggling, who are oppressed. And again, we might be like the people in Isaiah's day or the Levite and the priest of Luke 10 and say, we haven't done these things. We can't fix all these things. God hasn't called us to fix all of the world's problems individually. He's just called all of His people to be light. And so when you see something that is dark, when you see someone who is hurting, when you see someone who has been caught up, like we talked about from Ephesians chapter 5 last week, people who've been caught up with the lies of sin's consequences, we don't just shine light with our words, we shine light with our hearts and our hands and our feet, our actions, and we lend a helping hand. That light is missing in the world today. And we are the ones who've been called to be that light. And even in Old Testament times, God would look at His people and say, you want me to draw near? I've been calling you to draw near to the people in your very midst, to be light and life to them. So you continue to read this passage in Isaiah 58. And we end on a positive note. God gives the promise of a light that breaks forth. Continue reading in verse 8. Then shall your light break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up speedily. Your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and He will say, here I am. If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and speaking wickedness, if you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then shall your light rise in the darkness, and your gloom be as the noonday." Those are beautiful words spoken by the prophet. He says, here is God's promise to you. You feel like a light is missing within your life? I want to tell you something. There's a light missing out in the world, and it's your presence. But I give you this promise. If you do the things that I have just enumerated in verses 4 through 7, here's what will happen for you. Your light shall break forth like the dawn. Those of us who've been gathering on Monday mornings for our times of devotion and just encouragement as we start a new day and new week at the Ingalls on the West End, Russ especially has made note of this, and it's gotten my attention just about every morning. From where we sit there in Ingalls, we get the blessing to watch the sun rise in the east. And from where we sit, it's about like right there, about 10 o'clock, where we sit in Ingalls, and we get to watch the sun come up. That is a beautiful thing to behold. When you get to go to the beach and you watch the sun come up over the horizon, that's a beautiful thing to behold. This time of year, where the air is crisp and cool and the sky is blue and you see the sun come up over the Smokies, we are blessed to live in this part of the world to witness that. Spiritually speaking, that's the kind of thing Isaiah says can happen in our lives. That the light breaks forth like the dawn. He's using the sun as a metaphor, and it's rising as something that can take place in our hearts with regard to how we view God based on how we interact with our fellow man. What is interesting about this passage is the light that breaks forth is not so much, the focus of this passage is not so much the light breaking forth as we go back out into the world, even though that's part of what he says here. He says, if you want the light to break forth in your heart, go to the end of verse 10. He says, then shall your light rise in the darkness and your gloom. You find yourself in a position of gloom and darkness? Here's how you do it. Be light to the world. They go hand in hand. You want light in your life? Be light to the world. And if you are light to the world, you will have the light of the Lord breaking forth within you. Sometimes we overcomplicate matters. One thing that I have a greater appreciation for, and hopefully from this point forward, as people come to me and ask for counsel in their lives, they say, I'm just in a spiritually dark place, things aren't going well, again, my prayer life is suffering, don't get a lot out of worship, and again, common things that we've all gone through. Just a very simple piece of advice that I hope to consistently give people is go do good. Now, that's not to minimize or to overlook maybe some real struggles that are going on in their lives. But I will tell you this, speaking for me personally, when I've allowed the dark things in my life to just get me in a place where I feel sorry for myself and you know, I just think, you know, God's not being fair to me and people aren't being nice to me, one thing that I've found over and over again, if I just go out and do something good, light begins to break forth in my heart like the dawn. And sometimes it is just as simple as that. Not negating the difficult times we go through. But maybe God allows us to experience a sense of darkness so that we can realize the power and the depth of His light as we put it into practice in our lives. And it's not just Isaiah 58 that says that. We like to quote James chapter 2. You show me your faith without your works, and guess what I'll do? I'll show you my faith by my works. But you know the context in which James writes that? He says, what if those without clothing or those without food come to you in need, and you have the ability to meet that need, and in your faith, you say, be warmed and filled. What good is that faith? James says that's the dead faith. The faith that says, I will not take the opportunities presented before me to let my light shine, that others may see my good works and glorify my Father who is in heaven. That is a dead faith. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, you don't take a light, you don't take a candle in his day and time and you put it under a bushel basket. This past summer at High Rock Bible Camp, I did a lesson for the kids based on that passage. You don't need to know a lot of science to know this. If you take a candle and you cover it up, guess what happens? It dies, doesn't it, Brenda? Because it needs oxygen to live. It needs something to feed its light so that it can shine for others. Guess what? We work the same way spiritually. We hide ourselves in our homes and in our church buildings and on social media. God's called us to go out, to not cover ourselves, so that that light, yes, can shine for others, but also that it gives life to us. In the days of Isaiah, you go back to Isaiah chapter 1. Again, a parallel passage to what he will say in 58. Isaiah 1 verse 14. God speaking through the prophet says, "Your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hates. They have become a burden to me. I am weary of bearing them. When you spread out your hands, I will hide my eyes from you. Even though you make many prayers, I will not listen. Your hands are full of blood. Wash yourselves, make yourselves clean. Remove the evil of your deeds from before my eyes. Cease to do evil, learn to do good. Seek justice, correct oppression. Bring justice to the fatherless. Plead the widow's cause." I've said this to a few people recently, and I hope you understand what I mean when I say this. But God's people can worship too much. Worship is a good and wonderful thing and a necessary part of our spiritual lives. But what if our elders stood up here today and said, "You know what? We have decided that every waking minute in which you can be here, we want you to be in this church building worshiping the Lord because that's what He deserves." Would that be the greatest overall use and benefit of our lives? Would that be our sole purpose why God has left us on this earth? We all know the answer to that. God says to the people in Isaiah 1, "I'm tired of your prayers." They'd say, "We've prayed to you all kinds of times." In Isaiah 58, they said, "We have fasted and fasted." God says, "Quit fasting. Go do good. Go be light. And you will find your worship more fulfilling and more beneficial because you have more to worship about because you have seen me at work in your life." James, the Lord's brother. By the way, the Bible rarely uses the word religion. But one of the places it does is James chapter 1, verse 27. Jesus' brother himself says, "Pure and undefiled religion." That gets our attention. Pure and undefiled religion. That's the kind of life we want. He says this to do this. To visit widows and orphans in their affliction and to keep yourself unspotted from the world. Keeping ourselves unspotted is certainly a part of it. But moral purity in and of itself is not all that we've been called to do. We have been called to care for those who need us the most. To care for those who are in dark places. And guess what? When we do, the light breaks forth. The light breaks forth for them. And God promises the light will break forth in our lives as well. Has your light gone missing in your life? Is your light missing in the world today? When I feel like my light is becoming dimmer and darker, I need to evaluate. Am I being light for the Lord? Because if His word is true and if He is faithful to us, He promises that His light will break forth in our lives when we simply be His light to the world. He has called us to that purpose. This morning, if you need God's light in your life, His Son is the ultimate light of the world. Hopefully, as a church, we are a reflection of that. We are torchbearers, if you will. But the ultimate light is found in Jesus Christ. He came to this earth to be light, to show us life, to show us the Father, and to make for the way of salvation. If you've never had your sins forgiven by coming to Christ in baptism, you can make that decision today, and you can leave here a new person, showing what God is capable of doing in our lives when we allow His light to overcome the darkness in us. For us as a church, for those of us who are Christians, we are the light of the world. If you need that light rekindled this morning, if you need us to encourage you or pray for you or help you come back to the Lord in some way, please come forward while we stand and sing.